and welcome back to another episode of Lesbian Mommies Radio. I'm your host, Elizabeth Kleva. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. Tonight we're going to talk all about the logistics of lesbians making a baby. As those of you who are in the process of this know, timing is really everything. Most of us as lesbians don't have unlimited sperm at our disposal. Often it's just a one-shot deal every month. And so it's really important that we make the most of what we've got. So that's where my guest tonight comes in, Kristen Calley of Maya Midwifery. She is going to give us some of the basics of charting and timing. So for those of you that are about to get started getting pregnant or in the process, definitely tune in for the rest of the show. It's going to be awesome. One announcement before we get started. So I mentioned this on my last show, but I am needing some help from my community. I'm reaching out to you ladies. I'm just kind of running out of topic ideas, sadly. I didn't think that would ever happen, but it's happening. So I thought I would just reach out. I have a couple ideas. I really would love to get a couple gay dads on the show to share their perspective. I feel like, we have definite hurdles trying to get pregnant and have babies, but men, gay dads, it just seems like they have a whole other bunch of stuff to deal with, and I thought it'd be a really interesting perspective to share on the show. So if any of you know any gay dads that would be willing to share their story, let me know. I'm also trying to find a naturopathic doctor that specializes in pediatrics to talk about vaccines. Vaccines obviously been a really hot topic around the country lately, and I think it's really important to get a balanced view of vaccines. We don't hear, it seems like the media, at least mainstream media, has one view that they're portraying, which is that all vaccines are perfectly safe and everybody should be inoculated. And there are risks to vaccines. And I think it's important to look at the risks as well and the risks of not vaccinating, because there are risks to that too. And I just want to have a doctor to come on to discuss a balanced view of all of that. So if any of you know a naturopathic doctor that would want to talk about that, let me know. That would be awesome. You can email me at elizabeth@lesbymommies.com. And I will definitely look into everything you send me. So thank you very much. Check us out online at lesbymommies.com, Facebook at facebook.com/lesbymommiesradio. All of our past shows are on iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio. And you can even find me on Twitter at lesbymomsradio. I just figured out Twitter. I used to hate Twitter because I didn't understand it, but now I find it pretty interesting. All right, so let's get to our show. Let me introduce Kristen Calley. Kristen Calley, LMCPM, is a talented and insightful guide for families in the process of welcoming a baby. As a midwife, she applies clinical knowledge within a context of client education, empowerment, and support. Since 1997, Kristen has assisted hundreds of people in the process of becoming parents. Kristen holds space for new parents to fully realize the deeply transformational process and life-altering capacity of the conception, pregnancy, and birth experience. She honors the centrality of a parent's own sense of inner knowing, vital to the journey of creating, birthing, and nurturing a child. She works in partnership with families who have decided to take an active role in the health of their pregnancies, their babies, and their relationship with one another, allowing empowerment to take place within an atmosphere of trust, respect, and love. Kristen is a certified professional midwife through the North American Registry of Midwives. She's a licensed midwife in California and Washington. She's a graduate of the Seattle Midwifery School and a member of the Midwives Association of North America, National Association of Certified Professional Midwives, American Society for Reproductive Medicine, Gay and Lesbian Medical Association, California Association of Midwives, and Midwives Association of Washington State. Kristen joined Maya in 2006 and is currently its sole owner. Kristen, welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Yes, my pleasure. I appreciate you being here. Oh, and I just wanted to, I have to just say this, Kristen. So Kristen was scheduled to be on the show a couple weeks ago, and I completely stood her up. She was sitting on here waiting for me to show up, and I was nowhere to be found. So I just had to publicly shame myself about that because it was just so bad. So I'm really honored that Kristen's taken the time to do this again with me. So anyway, thank you, Kristen. I really do appreciate you being back on the show.
No problem.
So start us off by telling everyone how you got into the work you do.
Okay, well, at the you know, the base level of being drawn to midwifery, I had a baby. And I had a baby when I was young. I was 22 years old and not sure what I wanted to do with my life. And at a postpartum visit after I'd given birth and midwife came to my house, she turned to leave and it just dawned on me, oh, this is what I could do. It has all the elements of what I want to do. And I was a full-time parent for a good couple of years and had a lot of time to spend with a lot of different people with young babies. And my path as a midwife just kind of naturally unfolded, being involved in my community. That was back in Missouri, and I eventually moved to the West Coast. I moved to Seattle in 2000, and by 2001, I was enrolled at Seattle Midwifery School. And as a part of my midwifery education, we had these modules that we would, each of us would research and then present to the class. And so things like, you know, teen pregnancy, lesbian pregnancy. And I, of course, volunteered to do the presentation on lesbian pregnancy. And it was supposed to be 20 minutes. And this was the entirety of the curriculum within all of our years of midwifery education on lesbian Wow. pregnancy. And so I was like, okay, I better make the most of this. It's got to be about undoing homophobia. Like, that's the most, that's the best way I can approach this. And so I got into it. And then eventually I came to my instructor and I was like, look, this is 20 minutes. I don't know what really, how I can present lesbian pregnancy in 20 minutes. And she said, oh, you know, just present about the garden variety lesbian. And let me
what
say,
the
school has come a long way in the intervening 14 years. Exactly. What is the garden variety lesbian, right? Like, as if there is one. So anyway, I did my, you know, 20-minute condensed version of how you might discover your homophobia and what to do about it. Not a very supportive class, but, you know, trying to squeeze that into 20 minutes, I was like, all right, something's got to shift in midwifery to better serve queer families. And so I started searching, and I actually found Maya Midwifery online and sought out then founder and midwife Stephanie Brill and started studying with her and basically took she was ready to stop practicing and after training me handed the practice over to me in 2006. So I've been the sole midwife ever since.
That's awesome. Congratulations on that. Very
Thank
cool
you.
And what a great story. I love it. All right, so let's get into the topic of the day. So talk about just why charting and timing is so important in general.
Mm-hmm. Well, basically, you have to have sperm and egg in the same place at the same time. And that's it in a nutshell and much easier said than done. What we know about the female body is that there is no textbook female body, kind of like there's no garden variety lesbian. Every body is different, and we all display our fertile signs differently, knowing that we only ovulate once in a month, somewhere around mid-month, not necessarily on day 14, like the textbooks will tell you. But there's no, because we all display our fertile signs differently, there's no one-size-fits-all approach, although that's what conventional fertility medicine tries to do, kind of whittling everything down to statistics and averages, some of which are not actually very well researched. So our, you know, standard timing approach of do your ovulation predictor kit and come in the next day or 36 hours later, there's really not much research foundation for that at all. And as a result, many people spend months, years, thousands of dollars trying to conceive when they're not getting the sperm and egg in the same place at the same time. And what I always think about additionally is, aside from the technicalities of it, what's gained in the process of charting your cycle is knowledge of and reverence for your body and what it's capable of. which I find is perfect preparation for giving birth and even for parenting, what people go through in the process of really looking so deeply at themselves and at their bodies, is the beginning of pregnancy for people who are conceiving with this level of intention.
I love that. That's so true. And it really was after I started working with you that I really got that deep into the knowledge of my body. It's been really fascinating, and I'm sure we'll discuss that a little bit more. So talk about some of the basic anatomy of conception, because I think a lot of people, you know, it's kind of a black box down there. You don't necessarily know all the parts and what's going on. So share some about that.
Okay. So in the female reproductive system, of course, you have the vaginal canal, which by feel has ridged walls. And if you're feeling inside yourself, and you go as far in as you can past those ridged walls, you come up against kind of the end of the tunnel, which is this round, smooth cervix. And if you were to feel the cervix, there would be kind of a dimple somewhere on it. And that dimple is the opening of the cervix or the cervical os. And the cervix actually is the opening to the uterus. The uterus is kind of like an inverted turtleneck sweater, and the turtleneck of the sweater is the cervix. At the top of the uterus, extending out on either side, are your fallopian tubes, which have, I think of them like this fine velour carpet in the lining of the fallopian tubes. And if you were to look at it microscopically, there would be these tiny little cilia or hair-like structures. And your ovaries are at either end, at the end of each fallopian tube. And mid-cycle, so by mid-cycle, what I'm referring to is day one of your period is day one of your cycle. And as you have your period over that first week of your cycle, the body's actually choosing which eggs it's going to ovulate that cycle. And by somewhere about halfway through the cycle, the egg will be mature, and meanwhile your body has been producing more and more and more estrogen. And when the estrogen gets to a peak, it triggers the release of the mature egg. There's an intermediary hormone involved in that called luteinizing hormone, and that's the hormone that your ovulation predictor kit picks up. So the LH surges in response to high estrogen. Also in response to high estrogen, you have a cervix that's become very soft, that has opened up, and the quality of the fluid has changed so that on a cellular level, rather than the cervical fluid blocking anything from entering the uterus, it changes to allow sperm to come into the body to conceive. So when the ovulation happens, the egg kind of flows out into the fallopian tube, and if there are sperm there waiting in the fallopian tubes, kind of burrowed into those cilia, then they can find the egg. And additionally, the sperm have to undergo changes that allow them to have the ability to fertilize an egg. So the sperm are actually completing their development within the female body. So this is why it's important to have the sperm there waiting when you ovulate. And the thing is, sperm are time limited as well. They have a limited lifespan. And so with fresh sperm, they can live for up to 3 days. Frozen sperm can live for up to 24 hours. And then you get into the intricacies of how long do they live versus how long are they viable? Because at the end of their lifespan, perhaps they're not as viable. So there's, we don't know exactly, and there's individual difference among men as well in terms of how long their sperm live and different things that can affect them. I don't think you were asking that detail, but essentially the sperm have to be there waiting for the egg, and because of the limited lifespan of sperm, when you're thinking about insemination, you have to have the sperm there before the egg, but not too early, because they still need to be viable and living and able to fertilize that egg when it releases.
Wow. I didn't realize that the sperm go through some developmental process once they get inside the uterus. That's interesting.
Yes. And additionally, the fluid that is made by the cervix in response to that high estrogen, that fluid change, if you look at that fluid under a microscope, it looks, well, let me describe it this way. When you're not fertile, if you look at the kind of sticky, tacky discharge that you have, it will look like a fishnet, like it's made to keep everything out, to catch anything. When you're fertile, it looks more like a system of freeway on-ramps, where it's these branched pathways that will filter out sperm that aren't swimming or that aren't shaped correctly, so that only the sperm that are moving and moving well and shaped right can get through. And then on top of that, some sperm swim quickly, some swim more slowly. And so inside the cervix, your body makes proteins that can keep sperm alive so that they can time release. The fast swimmers that immediately go straight through the uterus and end up in the fallopian tubes within 20 minutes of insemination,
wow,
those swimmers have to get through the uterus that quick. Otherwise, your body sends white blood cells to keep the inside of the uterus clean. So those tubes, those the fallopian tubes that I gave the imagery of this soft velour lining, they have to make it there. They can't really be straggling in between. So it's a system that the female body has for selecting the best quality sperm. And then from there, they have to undergo those changes. So any that didn't, of course, won't make it to the egg. And then once they get to the egg, the sperm have to line up around the edge and essentially work together so that one sperm will actually break through the zona pellucida or the covering of the egg and be able to release its genetic material and conceive. So it's a pretty grand process, and that's why there are millions of sperm involved, because our body selects. Yeah,
it's so crazy. I mean, just to think of the intricacy of that, and I mean, the way the cervical mucus changes, and the proteins that help these guys do their thing, and then the fact that if they're still in the uterus after a while, they're going to get attacked. It's just such a crazy system. It's amazing, and it's you know, that makes me appreciate why pregnancy doesn't happen all the time. You know, there's like so much that has to happen for that one sperm to make it in. It's just incredible. So talk about the rule of three and how a woman can determine her peak fertility time given all of the stuff that's going on.
Sure. So the rule of three was a term that was coined years ago by the founders of Maya Midwifery, Stephanie Burrell and Kim Toves, and it was written about in Stephanie's book, The New Essential Guide to Lesbian Conception, Pregnancy, and Birth, which is currently out of print. The last printing was 2005. So I have to give them credit for that term, but really it's something very simple, which is that when you have peak fertility, the body displays so many different fertile signs that kind of build, and then on a certain day or days, there will be multiple signs present and observable. And that, so when we talk about the rule of three, you're looking for three fertile signs to line up on the same day, and that's your peak fertility time. In other words, they're all evidence of that high estrogen level in the body. And so when you get multiple signs of high estrogen, it would take high estrogen to be able to give you that many signs.
Makes sense. So talk a little about what some of those signs are.
Okay. Well, for one thing, like I mentioned, when you have high estrogen, the cervix itself changes. And it's so fascinating to me how little we learned when we were young and in school, and depending on, you know, how much scientific study any of us did in junior high or high school, even taking in-depth science courses, the basic function of the female body is often not discussed. And so it's one of my favorite things is teaching people how to monitor the changes in their cervix, because it is the most direct information that your body gives you about when it is fertile, and it's right there for you to find and to know. So like I mentioned before, if you were going by feel, you would put a finger, or usually you have to use two fingers to put inside your body and feel your cervix. And over time, as the days go by leading up to ovulation, you can start to feel your cervix getting softer and that dimple in the middle, the os, opening up. For some people, there's also a change in position of the cervix. So it may move from being really hard to reach. It might move down where it's easier to reach, or vice versa. It may go from being relatively easy to reach to right at the time of ovulation, you can't reach it at all, which is disconcerting if you are trying to track the changes to know when to inseminate. But I always tell people it's possible that that is a positive fertility sign for you. Uterine anatomy is not always symmetrical. So for some people, the cervix might be pointing to the side and then go to the center. So you kind of have to get accustomed to what your own anatomy is. And it takes a few months to do that because you only get one picture of those changes your body goes through per month. So when people monitor their cervix by feel, it typically takes 2 or 3 months to really recognize the changes and understand them in a way that's going to be predictable for predicting ovulation, again, because the sperm has to be there before the egg. Additionally, you can look at the changes in your cervix by using a speculum, a flashlight, and a mirror. And when people first see their cervix for the first time, it's what I hear is, oh my gosh, I never knew, and this is so powerful to know that I can just look at my cervix and see whether or not I'm fertile. Because sometimes the changes in the os are very subtle, and you might be able to see them better than you can feel them. Additionally, there's the fluid that's produced by the cervix. And for some people, that fluid comes out, they get a wet spot on their underwear, or when they wipe after using the bathroom, it's super slick. For other people, they don't have that much fluid, and when they start looking at the cervix with a speculum, they start to understand the changes in their fluid because they can see it coming out of the source, which is the cervix. And so that can be really clarifying. In addition, people might be able to feel themselves ovulate and have some sensation around ovulation time. This sometimes is the release of the egg, but sometimes it's pre-ovulatory, sometimes it's post-ovulatory. With the high estrogen, that's what triggers the release of luteinizing hormone. So I do work with people around using an ovulation predictor kit, how to make that work for you, because the package instructions aren't going to serve you if you're using frozen sperm. There are fertility monitors, little microscopes where you can look at your saliva under a microscope, and in response to that high estrogen, your saliva makes a fern-like pattern. So on my website, there's a chart, and it has a number of signs all down the side so that people can track them. I guess other things that are on there are high sex drive, also a primary fertility sign, changes in appetite, mood, changes in sleep, and quality of dreams. So you put all this information together, and you start to see that signs start lining up for you all on one day. And so that rule of three is at least three signs lining up on the same day.
That's awesome. And I just want to talk about real quick the visual on the cervix, because it was after seeing you that I got a speculum and I started looking at my own cervix. And it, like you said, it's first of all just fascinating to look at it and then to watch the changes, but it really was empowering. And I feel like I know so much more about my body. I'm so much more comfortable with my body. It's like every month it's really interesting, like a little science project to monitor what my cervix is doing every day. So
yeah,
super awesome. I mean, I know some people are freaked out by it. Like I've shared it with some people. They're like, oh, I couldn't do that. But I don't know. I mean, I just take it as information gathering, and I find it fascinating. So I definitely recommend that women do it because I think it is really empowering. So with all of these, I mean, there's obviously a ton of these different signs to chart and use for your timing. So talk about the charting process, how you do it, what you include, if there's things you don't include, what the best way to do the charting.
Well, that would take a couple hours, frankly. There are sample charts on my website. There's little descriptions with each sign, you know, what it is you're looking for. But I actually teach a two-hour class called Timing is Everything, and I teach it in Seattle and Oakland. It's also available online. In fact, there's a webinar version of Timing is Everything coming up in a few weeks. I also have a blog post on my website that kind of came from me working with people's charts and having people come into my practice having tracked their cycle for months and still not gotten the information that's going to help them, that's really usable and is going to help them narrow down the right time to inseminate. And so the how could that happen, you might be wondering. The way that could happen is using fertility apps that are designed for people who have endless access to fresh sperm, i.e. they're women who have a male partner and are having intercourse to conceive. You can get away with using an app. But if you're coordinating with the donor or if you're using frozen sperm, you have to know more specifically when ovulation is happening, because there's a much greater investment, whether it's just time and coordination or, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars on each cycle. And so I wrote this blog post called The Best Fertility Calculator on the Market, because I think people want to use an app because they think it's going to be easier. They have it with them all the time. They can just, you know, put it in their phone. But what ends up happening is you can't get the same level of at a glance, look at it and really see how the signs are building, how they line up, and when they go away as succinctly as you can when you actually put it on a piece of paper. So, you know, in terms of key fertility signs, I kind of mentioned them, the changes in the cervix, the cervical fluid, changes in sex drive, potentially ovulation sensation, but still you'd have to measure, you know, where does that ovulation sensation come in relation to the other signs? Additionally, where do you get your OPK positive in relation to the other peak signs? So even measuring what the ovulation predictor kit is telling you, okay, so it's a predictor, but how many hours until I ovulate once I get a positive on my kit? And so charting all of those things in a way that you can really see how they line up and not just using symbols. A lot of the apps will use symbols for different fertile signs, and you kind of, when you look at it, you have to be remembering what the symbols mean. So there's this interpretation of the notations on the chart that's involved, which puts you one step away from the information that you actually need to use, which is what exactly happened. So you can do that on a paper chart. Additionally, I do have people chart their basal body temperature. There's also a basal body chart on my website. You can get them anywhere online. It's so easy to just find one. It's basically a chart of numbers. But your body temperature when it's at rest is higher in the second half of your cycle than it was in the first half of the cycle. And the reason why is after that high estrogen period where you release the egg, your body starts producing progesterone after the release of the egg, and progesterone is a warming hormone in the body. So when you have a high circulating level of progesterone, your basal body temperature will rise and be on average higher than the temps in the first half of your cycle. And that temp rise happens often the day after ovulation. Sometimes people can have a little slower rise. How do you know what that is for you? Well, you put it together with the other signs. So the idea here is that you're collecting this information and then looking at it and seeing how it lines up. And I also get a lot of calls from people who say, I charted my signs and I can't figure it out. I can't make any sense of it. And when people tell me that, most of the time it's one of two things. Sometimes it's just that they're not charting enough things. So they might just be doing the OPK and not charting temperature consistently. So only charting a couple of signs and not with consistency to be able to really have that solid data. But what's often happening when people say they can't make sense of their chart is there's a hormonal imbalance, and so the signs aren't all lining up on one or two days. Maybe they're really spread out, or maybe the kit doesn't ever turn positive, or they don't ever find any fertile mucus, or by the time the kit turns positive, the mucus is gone, and then the temperature isn't rising for a few days after that. So to me, I also use charts as part of my assessment of how strong your ovulation is, how balanced your hormones are, and how ready the body is, how primed it is to conceive in a given cycle. So I also use charting as part of my assessment, and I do a whole lot of work with people around fertility enhancement, which incidentally is fantastic preparation for pregnancy in the body. So the things that you do to enhance your pregnancy or enhance your fertility will also flow right into healthy support for becoming pregnant and carrying a pregnancy successfully to term.
Yeah. And just, I wanted to emphasize, I guess, what you're saying too is just that it's such a personal experience. Like, all your signs are so, we're all unique and we all have these different signs. And so one of the things that I loved about working with you is that you helped me to put them all together. Because they're all different signs and they're coming at different times. And what does this mean? And what does this mean? There's all these, you know, the textbook, okay, you want this, but it's not looking like that for me. And so I just wanted to recommend having a personalized approach with someone like you, or, you know, taking one of these timing courses, because it's easier said than done. And when you get into all the nuances of your own fertility signs, it's like kind of crazy making. I don't know what this means. So,
And then people start thinking, you know, what's wrong, and this, you know, feelings of hopelessness can come in, because the thing is, it's not just a science project. You're trying to have a baby. And so there's all this emotional investment involved. And I want to help people, you know, part of what's in my bio about empowerment and education and support, it's recognizing that you're getting this information because you want to be pregnant. And within that is, if you're not getting pregnant, a lot of heartache. And so I want to help it work as quickly and easily as possible. And if the signs aren't lining up and you can't make sense of it, then there's this, it can be really overwhelming. And so giving people some tools to really get the solid information, I think in itself, that's part of how the empowerment comes, and it starts to feel like, oh, okay, there's something I can do, because there is. So that's really beautiful for me to be able to witness from where I sit.
Absolutely. Now, when my wife and I started the process, we went to a fertility doctor just because that's what there was to do, as far as I knew, and all she said was, check your OPK once a day and call me when it's positive and you'll come in the next day. Like, that was it. So, mm-hmm. You know, there was no discussion of charting or anything. So if you're seeing a fertility doctor and doing IUIs or IVF, is charting as necessary than if you're doing this at home without a quote-unquote professional?
Mm-hmm. Well, first I just want to say that for some people, that approach of being on a stick once a day and going in the next day might work. So I know that there are people who say, oh, yeah, I went to the doctor and that's what I did and I got pregnant. It's just that there's a whole bunch of people for whom it doesn't work. And part of the reason is that if you're only testing your LH surge once per day, and for instance, you get your surge a few hours after you test, and then you don't test until the next day, you could be pretty much a full day behind in terms of knowing when that LH surged. And it's the surge of luteinizing hormone that triggers the release of the egg. So you catch it the next day that the ovaries have been reacting on that for a day before you find out. So I certainly have people test more than once a day. Yes, if you're working with a fertility doctor, yes, you still need to chart if you're doing IUI. And because with intrauterine insemination, you're bypassing the cervix and putting the sperm directly into the uterus right at the top. And so conceivably, they're going directly to the fallopian tubes. So statistically, IUI does increase your chances of conceiving versus vaginal insemination. However, only with good timing. If the timing's off, then you're going to be at the other end of those statistics. So, again, understanding the anatomy of what's happening, that cervical mucus that the sperm can live in actually inside the cervix, you're bypassing that system. So the time differential is much closer. The sperm can go into the fallopian tubes and embed themselves there and start preparing to release an egg or to fertilize an egg. But the lifespan of those sperm may be shortened because they don't have access to the cervical mucus. And some physicians are happy for you to say, you know, okay, I want to come in and do my IUI tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, and that's totally fine. Others really are very have a solid routine where they just want people to come in when they get their positive on their kit. And so when I work with people who are getting their IUI in a doctor's office with that kind of strict protocol, I still have them chart their cycle, but we actually look at all the other signs, determine when you're ovulating based on all of the information that your body can give you. And if that means that you're calling the doctor's office when you get some other signs that are the equivalent of what they're asking for, what they're asking for is, let me know when your body tells you the day before you want to inseminate. And so I'm just saying, follow some other information, and when you get that other information, call the doctor's office and tell them, think of it as a code word for what they want to hear, that you got the positive on your kit and you want your insemination the next day. So there's some ways of working around that. And I certainly want to say that I work with lots and lots of people who are working with a clinic to get pregnant, and they find that it's a complementary approach where they have access to the medical care, they can get testing, they can get their inseminations. But what's not addressed there, which is timing that's specific to the individual, but also all of the fertility enhancement pieces of how can we increase the chances that this is going to work by making sure that your body is super, super ready to receive that sperm and conceive and hold the pregnancy. So it ends up being a really good partnership. I guess another thing that I should mention is what's also used a lot in clinics is the HCG shot, or it's human chorionic gonadotropin, HCG, which mimics, that's the pregnancy hormone. But when you give it as an injection mid-cycle, when you have follicles that are mature enough to ovulate, and you give this HCG shot, it acts like luteinizing hormone in the body, so it will also trigger the release of those eggs. And it's thought that if you give the HCG shot, that helps you with timing because you know when the eggs have received that surge or when the ovaries have received that surge. And so the understanding is that then we can do the insemination the next day, and that will be good timing. However, if your body was already ready to ovulate on its own, your body's not going to wait because you got that shot. So let's say they did an ultrasound, they said, yep, your follicles are big enough, do the shot tonight. If your body was already going to ovulate that night, then or that day, then it would still ovulate regardless of the shot. And by the time you wait after that shot and go in, your egg may not be viable anymore. The egg lives for about 24 hours and shorter the older we are. So, and I'm not against HCG. There are some situations where I can see by reading people's charts that the body's developing eggs but not releasing them. And in those cases, I definitely recommend the HCG shot along with ultrasound. So I help people understand how to best use what fertility medicine is offering them and make the most of it in a way that's going to work for their body. With IVF, that's a completely different thing where with in vitro fertilization, the body is most often being stimulated to produce a lot of eggs. Those eggs are retrieved and the conception's happening in the lab. And then the embryos being transplanted are transferred back into the uterus. So the charting is not necessary, but fertility enhancement, absolutely. Even taking we have studies that show us even taking a multivitamin, exercising regularly, meditation, all have been shown to increase success rates. My approach is more specific than that. For instance, I recommend that people do some different testing that may not be recommended or routinely done in a clinic. For instance, vitamin D levels. A lot of people have diminished vitamin D, and vitamin D is necessary for successful implantation. We do have at least one study showing us that, but it hasn't been incorporated broadly into practice in fertility clinics. More specific testing of thyroid hormones. So I'm getting a full picture of someone's fertile health and going beyond the standard medical approach, even with IVF. So the way I look at it is they can do all the technical, uber scientific, what I do is science, but very clinical aspects of conception where I'm doing the very much scientifically and evidence-based things, how you care for your body and how what you're putting in and how you're living your life affects your fertility and affects the endocrine system. So it's definitely a scientific approach, but I'm breaking it down in a very usable model and fertility enhancement plan that's helping people do what they can do to support the success of an IVF cycle. So it's, you know, two different things and two different approaches in my book in terms of IUI versus IVF in a clinic.
Yeah, completely. Awesome. So we've kind of talked about timing through this conversation, but is there anything else you want to add about how you bring all of this charting together into timing of insemination?
Well, I guess, you know, the most basic thing is that you're wanting to know when your body's displaying its signs of peak fertility. And those signs of peak fertility, they may last for a couple of days, depending on age. When we're younger, we tend to have peak fertile signs for a few days. And as we get over 35 and over 40, which most of my clients are over 35 and have at large, I would say about a third of my practice is over 40. Excuse me. That fertile window becomes more and more narrow, where it may eventually be only one day or even part of a day. And so, because you see this buildup of peak fertile signs, and then you can see your peak fertile signs. But because with donor insemination, you want to time your insemination as close to ovulation as possible, you need to know when those fertile signs go away. So, and, of course, once the fertile signs go away, you've already ovulated. So you need to know when it's coming, but how wide your window is. And the only way you can really know that is by charting your cycles successively, so that once you finish a cycle, you have this retrospective information about the buildup of your fertile signs, the peak of the fertile signs, and when those signs went away. And when the signs go away, what I'm talking about is when the cervix closes, when the mucus goes back to a sticky, tacky, barrier, non-fertile type of mucus. There are other signs like breast changes that might be post-ovulatory, and certainly when the basal body temperature rises. So being able to look retrospectively at when the signs went away and kind of count backwards from there looking at if you're doing vaginal insemination, when did you have your best fertile mucus, because you need that fertile mucus for the sperm to find their way into the body. And if you're using frozen sperm, how close to the time your insemination. I like for people to do more than one insemination if they can, because especially with donor sperm, because you have this one go at it, and if you didn't get the timing right or something was a little off in your body, which our bodies are affected by stress, by life events, then you're better off to have been sure that you covered your fertile window than to have potentially missed it by only doing one insemination. So your timing approach is going to be based on whether you're using fresh or frozen sperm, whether you're doing vaginal insemination or IUI, and all of that is going to be narrowed down by charting more than 1 month. In 1 month, you can get this retrospective picture. In 2 or 3 months, you can start to understand the pattern. So going into this and having the financial cost and the emotional cost so high of working with donor sperm, you can really feel so much more grounded in the process by really understanding how your body works in a very predictable way. I can't tell you how grounding it is for people to really know what to expect and how they're going to approach things. So, and that takes charting more than one cycle. Ideally, people chart 3 cycles before they start inseminating, and I certainly have people who come to me and they're like, okay, I want to do it this month. And so I have a paging service, and I allow people to page me for urgent timing advice. But still, we're not exactly sure how your body, how broad that window is going to be. So you have so much information even after just having one cycle charted. So we work with it based on where people are at in that charting process.
Yeah, it makes sense. And, you know, going through this for myself, starting to do the charting and trying to interpret it on my own, I found challenging. And so I was really stoked when I found you, because I had found the book first, and the book was amazing. I highly recommend the book, and I'll put the name of it on the show notes. But really, in finding you online and then hiring you basically to like help me interpret my signs was just it was so invaluable. It was just made a ton of difference. So talk a little bit about your fertility care packages and what you offer people, whether it's in person or online. I know a lot of the listeners are across the country, so a lot of them might want to be doing it online, kind of, or over the phone. Work mm-hmm. with you.
Okay. Well, I call it a fertility care package because I don't ever just meet with somebody once and then that's it. Because it takes your body a full month to display a fertile cycle, and it takes more than 1 month for it to display a pattern. Additionally, the eggs that you have in a given cycle started their development, really started being chosen by the body about a year ago, and started getting most of their blood flow that is leading up to them being primary follicles and being released at ovulation about 3 months ago. So understanding that the health of our eggs, as well as our ability to predict ovulation, takes about 3 months for all of that to be really solid. And so with every consultation, I do 3 months of follow-up. And during that follow-up time, people can send me their charts. I review the charts not only for coming up with a timing approach, but also helping people get the best information from their body. You know, what a loss to have tracked for months upon months and not gotten all the information that would actually make those charts really useful. So I'm able to work with people kind of as they go in gathering the information that they need and then being able to utilize that information to come up with a timing plan. And then I'm also looking at charts and assessing for hormonal balance and getting signs that the body is going to be ready to conceive and hold a pregnancy. So additionally, when I do the consultation, it's an hour and a half. So I'm doing a health history. I have people fill out a 3-day diet log before they come to see me. I work with people around nutrition. I ask people different questions about their lifestyle because it's all things that will affect the endocrine system and the reproductive system in terms of your hormones. So I really get a picture of who someone is, how they live their life, and then put together a fertility enhancement plan that's based on who they are and how they can boost their fertility and still feel like themselves, and in fact have that fertility boosting time be a life enhancing process. What I hear more and more is, wow, when I did these things, I felt better. And, you know, this and this and this that used to be a problem for me, I'm not having these experiences anymore, whether it's painful menstrual cramps or people's stress level actually goes down when they start caring for the body in a way that balances the hormones. So all of that takes time. And so I call it a package really just to communicate that it's not just a one-time visit, that there's a follow-up piece. I have offices in Seattle and Oakland where I meet with people in person. And then I also do consultations online. So I use a program called GoToMeeting where we can see each other on the screen and have a face-to-face conversation, although it's over a screen. It's all the same as when you meet with me in person. So, and additionally, I'll do a little 15-minute meet and greet if you just want to talk about your situation and understand how I might be able to help you. So I offer that for free. You can sign up for that on my website and just get on the schedule in either city or online. And then once people do come in with me, again, it's that 3-month package. I also have some classes. I have products on my website. So there are some packages that are kind of upgraded where if you're going to take a couple of classes, then I throw in a product discount, for instance. But it's all the same basic thing in terms of the direct consultation services of a 90-minute initial consult and 3 months of follow-up.
Awesome. And again, highly recommend it. You'd go into so much depth. I mean, you looked at all of my blood work and all of this stuff. I was really impressed at how much depth you went into. So highly recommend you guys checking Kristen's packages out. So is there anything else that you wanted to mention before we wrap up the show?
Sure. I think you said that the show's going to air at the end of March, which is really timely. Pun intended. I'm teaching a class called Timing is Everything as an online webinar on April 11th at, I believe it's 3 p.m. Pacific time. You can register on my website, which is Maya Midwifery, MAIA Midwifery.com. I also have some webinars that are recorded that you can download. All About Sperm is all about different sources of donor sperm, fresh versus frozen, how to inseminate, and different things involved in your sperm source. So that's available online. I do have a blog, and you can sign up for my email newsletter, which I tend to send out a mass email about once a month. I will list classes that are coming up. Often there's a blog post that's included in that newsletter. So if you're in the process of trying to conceive, it's always really useful information, and I encourage you to look at the website and take a look at the articles that are there. They're usually really timely with things that are coming up for people in my practice, and so I'll just write an article to benefit everyone. I do some support groups. I do a solo conception support group that meets online every other Tuesday at 6:30 Pacific time. And the people in that group are all getting pregnant on their own. And I have people all over the country that are a part of that group. And it's a solid, consistent group of people that the feedback that I've gotten is that it was so much more than they ever thought something online could be, because everyone's really connected to one another and really invested in one another's process and giving and receiving support as part of the group. And it's a facilitated group, so I'm there every week asking questions and kind of helping people. I can offer a little fertility advice when it's timely, but mostly it's just working with the experience of trying to conceive as a single person. I also do childbirth classes for LGBTQ families in Seattle and Oakland, and I do trainings for care providers in providing culturally sensitive care for LGBTQ families, and that is also coming up as an online webinar offering on April 11th. I guess the only other thing is I do have a web store on my website, so if you want to purchase a speculum or a fertility microscope to look for that ferning in your saliva, you need a syringe for home insemination, or I also have a variety of high-quality herbs and supplements that I've researched specifically for the things that are going to be most effective at supporting fertility, but also the best quality. So it's almost like a product of my own research about what's going to be most useful for people on my web store. So that's what I wanted to let people know, is that there's a lot of resources available regardless of where you live. And if you're in Seattle or Oakland, I'm there as well.
Awesome. You're like a one-stop shop for lesbians looking to get pregnant. I love it.
I try.
It's awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show, Kristen. Really, really appreciate you doing the show. It was such great information. I wish I had had this information before we got started, because might have saved some time. I mean, who knows with me, but definitely for a lot of people, it will save them a lot of time. So thank you so much for doing the show. To everyone, I highly recommend you call Kristen and work with her. She's amazing and will really have you feel empowered in what you're doing. So check her out at MayaMidwifery.com. Kristen, have an amazing week, and I'll be sending you an email, I'm sure, very soon.
Thanks so much for having me. Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
All right, everyone. Hopefully you enjoyed that. So good. So good. Seriously, like, this is the kind of information that needs to get out to lesbians in advance. I didn't know this stuff when I started. I went to a fertility clinic and, you know, they don't even talk about this stuff. So it's really important. Hopefully you found it valuable. Share it with people that you know that are starting the process. Buy the book, A New Essential Guide to Lesbian Conception, Pregnancy, and Birth by Stephanie Brill. It is out of print, but I think Amazon sells used copies. And they're expensive. I think I spent like $100 on this book, but it is like the Bible. So super great information, goes into a lot more detail. And then just for your own, just to have a personalized approach, really, Kristen is invaluable. Highly, highly, highly recommend it. Very affordable, like such a good deal. So definitely check her out. If you have any topic suggestions for me, call me or I guess email me, Elizabeth@lesbianmommies.com. That would be an awesome help. Have an amazing week. I love you. Take care. Good luck with all your pregnancy stuff, and catch you next time.